Here he is singing and playing his famous 12-string guitar, which is his preferred instrument, and making up verses about Elnora, Austin, and the Lomax family. So there's a little quintessential Lead Belly just improvising for the family. Anyway, this, as far as I know, has never been issued commercially. There are a lot of little recordings like that, just sample things that he did for the family that never got out beyond that. Well, we move on from Lead Belly to another luminary from the Austin area. That's, of course, Janis Joplin. Of course, she's from the Gulf Coast area, Port Arthur, but... She went to the University of Texas briefly as an art student in the early 60s. And while she was here, she really came into contact with the members of the sort of the urban folk revival of the early 60s. And one of the places where this music was going on here in Austin was a restaurant now become legendary known as Threadgill's Restaurant. And there were hoots going on, hootenannies going on out there. There were folk singers and country singers holding forth every week out at Threadgill's Restaurant on North Lamar Boulevard. And Janis naturally attracted to this because she wasn't singing the hard-driving rock that she became known for later. She was singing Appalachian ballads and Bessie Smith blues songs. These were the things that pulled her strings at that time, and she was learning. She was cutting her teeth, really, on this folk music. Very bohemian, of course, lifestyle, and very flew in the face of the propriety of the young ladies of the university and the fraternities and all of that. This is all well documented. She was a maverick in many ways. socially, but musically, she was learning and embracing this music. So I think it would be interesting to hear some early Janis when she's just learning to sing in public. And the old man Threadgill, you know, took her under his wing and made it okay for this bohemian girl to show up, you know, without the lipstick, without the proper dress and all of that, and sing her music there with all these old country guys, you know, because they look askance at these hippies from the university. He made it okay. Well, here's Janis singing an old country ballad called Silver Threads and Golden Needles, and they're singing with the Waller Creek Boys at Threadgill's, and you can hear the conversation and the beer bottles and the whole thing. This is just somebody's private tape machine holding up a microphone. That's where Janis began. Finally, I want to something I think all of you being interested in recorded sound collections will find very interesting. This is an interview with one of the pioneers of Western swing music, the great fiddler Cliff Bruner, who began his musical career with Milton Brown and his musical Brownies. And Carrie Janelle is here, done the sort of the definitive work on Milton Brown's contribution, the creation of Western swing. Cliff Bruner now passed away, so it's very important to have his legacy recorded. This particular recording is part of an oral history done with Cliff Bruner back in 1981. By a journalist working out of San Antonio at the time, Alan Turner. He's now writing for the Houston paper. It's on the Texas desk in the Houston paper. Back then, he was doing a lot of interviews with musicians and people from other walks of life as background material for possible newspaper features in the San Antonio paper. He interviewed Cliff Bruner, and this little piece I want to share with you is Cliff Bruner's reminiscing about being with Milton Brown's band and going to his first recording sessions. And these were back when they made these makeshift studios in hotels and set up the equipment, and they just recorded one thing after another. Well, I'll let him tell you all about it. Here's Cliff Bruner and recording with Milton Brown.
Vocalion had some a bit later. Was there any overture made to you about possibly cutting some records at that point?
Well, at that time we had no exposure. Before my first exposure, I went with Milton, and I recorded with Milton. We made a session in New Orleans, mm-hmm. at the Roosevelt Hotel there, mm-hmm. and we made 48 sides at one setting. 48. That's a lot of them. And you talk about unrehearsed, just fast we could play the tune. But we had one microphone, seven musicians in a hotel room. And we just, studio man, you know, the technician, he'd be in another hotel room. And I mean small hotel rooms too. And he'd be in the other one, and they'd have a light, a green light, a white light, and a red light. Mm-hmm. The technician in one room and musicians in the other, with these cables running through the door. And the white light would come on and mean, be quiet. Start getting ready, and the red light to be real quiet. And when the green light came on, it means start playing. And if you made just too bad a boo-boo, they would have to, of course, would have to stop or, you know. And the technician was recording on wax. Have you ever seen any of that? It's about 2.5 inches thick. It looks like bees. It is beeswax. It's yellow. Piece of wax. And they'd have to send that all the way back to New York.
Have it plated.
To have it shaved.
Oh, I see.
They'd shave it.
Uh-huh.
And then be ready to send back out in the field. And they'd make another one on it, and it'd send it back and shave it again. Mm-hmm. So they got so thin that they wouldn't use it. See? That's the way they recorded back in those days.
That's a good idea of the sort of material that's on this interview, sort of telling details about the way music making and recording was back in the early days of Western Swing. This particular interview is on a project that has been developed at the University of Texas. I'm going to end right here. This Utopia is the name of it. It's a series of websites at the university that is now bringing our resources such as this and other recordings out to greater public access. One of the reasons I made this handout, it has the Utopia website there on the bottom. And so as this thing develops, you will be finding more and more music-related and arts-related materials on this University of Texas website. And I just wanted to alert you to the fact that this is finally coming out of the university. It's been a long time in the making, but it's about time. That's as much as I wanted to share with you right now, and I'll be glad to entertain any questions or comments. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Time. Yeah, we have time for a couple of quick questions.
Yes, sir. The website address, which
John doesn't have one.
I can't remember it. You know, I have right here at the bottom. The Utopia one is utopia.utexas.edu, and that'll get you started and just follow it from there, the links to arts and different subjects. Yes.
Yeah, in the back.
Back in the 70s, there was an LP issue that was reportedly
Lead
Belly performing at Gregory Gym.
Yeah.
I just wondered if y'all have that and any other recordings.
I'll tell you what happened. This is the funny history of recordings. That recording was made by the University of Texas at its new so-called Recital Hall Studio, which is now the Italian and Portuguese department, our Italian and French department, next to Littlefield Fountain on our campus. A very nice little theater there. In 1949, it was June 15th, 1949, and it happened to be Lead Belly's last public concert. He was dying of Lou Gehrig's disease. And this happened to be his last concert. It was recorded by the university, therefore it was university property, you know. Somehow the master got out of university hands and ended up in the hands of Playboy Records, who's the ones that issued that LP you're talking about in 1973. I don't know where they got the permission from it, but they do acknowledge that it was a University of Texas concert, but there seems to be no permissions involved in them putting it out. Nonetheless, that's where it came from. We have the original recordings over there at the university from which the LP was made. There may be some minor differences in what's on the LP and what's on these the basic recordings, but most of it is there. Yeah, there are, and this not just in our bailiwick, but also in the fine arts libraries collections of Percy Grainger, for example, the Australian composer, came to the university in the late 40s and played a concert with the University of Texas Symphony. Of course, Austin Symphony broadcasts themselves were recorded. So there's lots of, particularly in these old transcription 16-inch discs of Radio House, the precursor of KUT today. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Do you have the original discs of the 35 Lead Bellies, or are those up with the Lomax collection?
The Lomax collection at the University of Texas is where these are. Yes, we do. Yeah, these are the aluminum and acetate discs from the mid-30s.
Last question, Jerry.
Yes. Yeah. Powell St. John. Yeah, and of the Waller Creek Boys. Yeah, Powell St. John, of course, had his own group as well.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up there and move on to speaker number 3.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.